Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show.
Past the hour. It's hour number two of the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. I'm Dick Whitworth filling in for Bill, who is on a deserved little bit of time of R&R away from the show. He'll be back on Friday. Rebecca, this story is for you. This is actually a little bit of central Iowa to the forefront. Maybe you have or have not heard about this. A 400-year-old painting was found in Hoyt Sherman Place. Have you been there?
Yes, it's a beautiful facility. They still do shows there quite a bit,
yes.
Plays and music shows.
Very, very interesting place. Well, this 400-year-old painting could be worth millions. Apparently, the painting, Apollo and Venus, by late 16th century and early 17th century Belgium painter Otto van Veen. Not a real fan of his, but, you know.
I like his later work.
Yeah, it was good. Well, they found it. They were looking for some Civil War flags. And they uncovered it, and apparently it had been covered over. It was a horrible – someone tried to repair it and did a horrible job. They've had it for 4 months. They've restored it. Should be on display soon in the Hoyt Sherman Place in the not-too-distant future in Des Moines, Iowa.
That's amazing.
It's a little central Iowa news for you today. By the way, our verse today is Matthew 6:33 that just simply says, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these other things shall be added unto you." A great way to start the second hour. Coming up in just a moment or so, we're going to be talking to Joy Riley. Dr. Riley is a member of and executive director of the Christian Medical the Tennessee Center for Bioethics and Culture, and she's a member of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. So we'll be talking to Dr. Riley in just a few moments. Seven minutes past the hour. You're listening to the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. I'm Dick Whitworth. Hour number two underway with Dr. Joy Riley. She's a member of the Christian Medical and Dental Association, also executive director for the Tennessee Center for Bioethics and Culture. And we're thrilled to have her on the line today. Dr. Riley, welcome to the Early Morning Late Show.
Good morning, Dick. Nice to be here.
Well, it's an honor to have you. I am totally impressed with your title as executive director for the Tennessee Center for Bioethics and Culture. I myself have been rejected by three Kiwanis clubs, but to be in your position, it's pretty amazing. What do you do? What is the Center for Bioethics and Culture?
We're a 501c3 nonprofit. We're an educational nonprofit. And basically, we exist to promote human dignity from conception to natural death. And we spend our time defending human dignity in terms of the written word as well as speaking engagements and other resources.
When did you discover, tell me a little bit about yourself, in other words, that you had an interest in ethics, and obviously you're an internal medical doctor, but you're an ethicist residing in Nashville. How did this all come about for you?
Well, it really started, I guess, in college. I was interested in ethics. It was just sort of a natural interest. I took quite a few philosophy classes and a medical ethics class taught by the medical ethicist who taught at the medical school. And then in medical school, at that time, ethics was an elective, and I took it. So I had several encounters in the classroom formally, and the medical ethics was taught more at the bedside than now, in terms of there weren't so many formalized classes. Then after residency and some postgraduate work, including research. I had some time off, taught our children at home, and then went back to this classroom and did a master's in bioethics.
Very interesting. Tell me a little bit about your faith life. Did you grow up in a Christian family?
We grew up as Christmas and Easter people.
Ah, C&Es.
So that was my home life experience. But there was a small church across the road from where I lived, and I started attending there. And so from a young age was taught.
Very cool. Well, Dr. Riley, we are very excited to have you with us today and talking about certainly things way above my pay grade in terms of understanding. But I do recognize that ethically things are changing. And as we become more advanced technologically, including DNA testing, that there are some significant challenges before us. What benefits are there are certainly many, but there are also some challenges. So let's start with whole genome sequencing. What is that, and why is it something we should be concerned about or at least aware of?
Okay, that's a great question. Whole genome sequencing is probably most familiar to people through the Human Genome Project. That was finished during the Clinton administration, and was announced. This is the blueprint of life. This is the basically the manual for life. And so, as you look at a person's genome, although that was not a single person's genome, that was a compendium. But the genome is all the genetic material that makes us who we are. And that's not to say that we're only genetics, so don't hear that. But whole genome sequencing is a way of looking beyond just the 46 chromosomes to see what the sequence of letters of the GATC letters are that spell out the different genes. And when you look at the whole genome sequencing, you can determine certain things. It's also a bit of a black box to us still, because we just because we know how what the letters are doesn't mean we understand what words, if you will, what genes are being spelled out, or what kinds of activity those genes can necessarily have, because there are other things called epigenetic factors above the genome that affect it.
Well, Dr. Riley,
so it's sort of like having a can of alphabet soup.
Okay.
So you have all the letters, and you can pick out certain genes that you know about that cause certain diseases. So if you look through the genome, you can say, oh, here is this sector, and that section spells out this potential disease for the child or person, or it spells out definitive disease for this person.
So, Dr. Riley, from a layman's perspective, you can see these things. Is this just predictive? Are you able to, or are they working on the ability to remove those letters from the alphabet, so to speak?
Well, that's a great question. You're talking about genetic therapy, and we aren't very good at genetic therapy. There are lots of good people working on this, but typically we don't have a lot of understanding of how to do gene therapy. The problem often has been when you want to do genetic therapy, in the past they have introduced viral vectors. So they put the new gene in a virus, if you will. But the problem is that has overwhelmed the person's system sometimes and has not had good effect. So that is an area of interest. Right now, the concern with whole genome sequencing came about, and I suggested that topic because this past week, the Nuffield Council on Bioethics, which is a private group in Britain that advises the public and others on bioscience and medicine, released had a press release saying that their National Health Service is starting to use whole genome sequencing in the care of seriously ill babies. And there are a number of questions that come up. If you use whole genome sequencing and you're trying to figure out, will this child how will this child respond to certain medicines? Does this child have this kind of genetic disorder? How can we treat the child? There are good reasons to use some of this data. But when you collect data, it's not just simply data. It can be used in a variety of ways. And so several issues come up when you have this amount of data on a newborn, say. How is it going to be interpreted? Will you share the findings with the parents? How much of the findings will you share with the parents? When and how much will you share with the child? Where will the data be stored? Who will have access to it? And at least in the States, typically who has access to something is who paid for it. So if in our system, if the government pays for something, then they have access to it. If the private insurers pay for something, they have access to the data. How will this be used in the future? And so particularly when you apply this to newborns, those are significant issues.
Right.
In the U.S., when a baby is born, they pierce the heel and take a blood spot on filter paper and use that to test for certain diseases. Many years ago, it was for hypothyroidism, for something called galactosemia, for phenylketonuria. And now the states vary as to how many they test for, but several years ago, some states were testing for like 60-plus disorders.
Wow. Dr. Joy Riley of the Christian Medical and Dental Association is our guest. She's the executive director for the Tennessee Center for Bioethics and Culture. An interesting discussion with which we will continue in just a moment or so. Thank you for joining us. Second hour of the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. I'm Dick Whitworth. Good morning and welcome to Hour 2 of the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. My guest is Dr. Joy Riley. She is the Executive Director for the Tennessee Center for Bioethics and Culture, lives in Nashville. She is an internal medicine doctor and ethicist in Nashville. And we were talking about genome sequencing. And I conferred with Rebecca because I remember the story a few weeks ago that we discussed on the Early Morning Late Show. In Iceland, that was claiming the end of Down syndrome, but unfortunately, they were doing it through abortion, and really not much of a claim. And certainly, ethically, it's the kind of thing that those of us who aren't don't have the same kind of understanding that you do, Dr. Riley, in terms of the benefits. We hear things like that, and we do tend to overreact or get fearful about hearing these kinds of stories. And yet there are benefits that come with genome testing, correct? Sequencing?
There are benefits. The full benefit we don't know yet, and the full harm or possible harms we don't know yet. So it's like the beginning of any technology. You don't really know the end from the beginning. That's not ours to know.
That's a great point. Well, let's move on because this one probably hits a little closer to home for most of us. I won't be doing any whole genome sequencing at home anytime soon. But I am interested in, as an adoptive parent, my wife and I have two adoptive children. Jody is from Chicago, African-American, and our son Alex was born in Seoul, Korea. But the whole topic of surrogacy is new to me, and yet it was the cover story on Christianity Today recently, which tells the story of several Christian moms who signed up for being surrogates. There are a lot of issues to consider, which I'm sure you have done, and while in some areas it may be a landmine, it needs to be discussed. So kind of give us an overview of surrogacy.
Okay, good topic. Surrogacy has the earliest known surrogate we have record of is Hagar. So when Sarah and Abram were unsuccessful in having children for many years, Sarah had this wonderful idea. She thought we'll have a child through someone else. So that kind of surrogacy would be genetic surrogacy, where the mom who carried the child is also the actual genetic mother of the child. That's typically frowned upon in our culture, but perhaps less than it used to be. Another kind of surrogacy is gestational surrogacy, where the woman who is pregnant with the child is primarily pregnant with the child. She does not have any genetic, in terms of her chromosomes, effect on the child. It was not her egg, in other words. There are a couple other kinds of surrogacy. One would be called commercial surrogacy, where the person is paid to have the child, and usually that does not include the egg. The earliest case, or one of the earliest cases in the U.S., was, I believe her name was Mary Beth Whitehead, so you might remember the Baby M case.
I do.
Okay, so that's lends some historicity to this discussion, but that was a commercial as well as genetic surrogacy, as I recall. Then you have altruistic surrogacy, which is no payment unless it's perhaps covering expenses, like medical expenses and such. But that is often done when, for some reason or other, a woman cannot bear her own children. Perhaps they've gone through IVF and have embryos in the freezer, or for whatever reason can't be pregnant, maybe has ovaries but not a womb, and perhaps her sister chooses
sure.
to carry the child for her.
How do you encourage, or what would you encourage Christian families to actually think about surrogacy? It does seem like infertility, I don't know if this is accurate, but it seems like you hear more about it. It's on the rise. So is surrogacy an alternative for Christian families?
I think you have to be very careful in advocating that. I think that people who are considering surrogacy, and I think we all need to think about it, quite frankly, there are some landmines along the way, and I will just point out some of those.
Please.
A number of people feel that surrogacy allows the purchase and sale of children. And that's not true, obviously, in altruistic surrogacy, but when you are exchanging funds for more than the costs involved. And the other side of that is, who can estimate the cost on a woman's body from bearing the child? But when you are exchanging funds, you are engaging to some degree in purchase and sale of children. Another one is the potential for exploitation of the surrogate. Not all exploitation is financial. So it could be you're exploiting the familial bonds or other bonds, and you have to do some soul searching about that. Does the surrogacy violate the right of the mother to associate with her child? And there are some who feel that if you are pregnant with a child, you are the child's mother. And that's not necessarily incorrect thinking, but you do need to consider about the rights of the mothers to associate with their children. And perhaps one of the biggest things is that it involves detachment from the child in utero. And one of the beauties of having children as a mom is the ability to relate to your child, even in utero. And if it's not going to stay with you, how does that affect his or her development and ability to form attachments in the future? I don't think that's known.
Okay. Dr. Riley, thank you for your time. Unfortunately, we are out, and I do want to encourage anyone listening today that would like more information about this topic, surrogacy, check out Christianity Today, the March edition. They have an article, a cover story on that. And also, let me encourage you to visit Dr. Riley's website. It's TennesseeCBC.org. Dr. Joy Riley of the Christian Medical and Dental Association, Executive Director for the Tennessee Center for Bioethics and Culture, has been our guest. Dr. Riley, have a great day.
And you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It's a joy to meet you and to talk with you. 7:26 Central Time, and we're going to take a break for Break Point in just a few moments. Stay with us. 31 minutes past the hour. Coming up in just a few moments, in about 8 minutes from now, Paul Anthony, founder of Shower Up Ministry, a longtime friend. We're going to be talking about what God is doing in and through this important ministry in the Nashville area, and you'll enjoy hearing from Paul. If you'd like to hear more from Dr. Joy Riley, the Christian of the Christian Medical and Dental Association, if you'd like to hear the entire interview, perhaps you got in on the second half of our conversation, it will be online at our website, myfaithradio.com, in just a bit. So you can visit the Early Morning Late Show homepage on our website, and you can find out the podcast, hear the different hours of not only today's show, but of previous shows. All right, coming up in just a few moments, news, and then back with more of the Early Morning Late Show. Last week, U.S. Representative Tom Emmer of Minnesota's 6th District joined the Early Morning Late Show while he works in Washington. Father of 7, Tom enjoys being back in his hometown each weekend to be with his family.
You've got 7 kids, 6 boys and a daughter.
Wow. Now, you left out the most important person in my life, Jackie.
Jackie,
and
of course.
I have
of course,
7 kids.
Of course,
yes.
I should have framed that better.
Yeah.
Yeah, but 7 kids and 6 boys, that's incredible.
Well, one thing we've learned, and Jackie and I would give advice to anyone who's out there since we're at the tail end of it now, and I know that parents who are older that have already raised multiple males sell everything that is nice now. Everything. They will break it eventually, or
liquidate,
they will take it
home.
Apart. Yes.
Yes.
That's another story. So I decide I'm going to run for Congress because my predecessor and friend, Michelle Bachmann, announces she's not going to seek re-election. We had a sewer backup in our basement, which I've always joked. The good Lord said, you want to go to Congress? Well, here, I'm going to teach you what it looks like before you get there. We spent the summer redoing the basement, which had to be completely gutted. We hung 3 mirrors about 4 feet tall, and we'd had them hung there for years till the basement got flooded. Now we got to strip the walls and everything else. We took those mirrors down and remembered the reason we hung them is because the boys were wrestling, and one of them threw the other one's back end through the drywall in between 2 studs, and I didn't want to fix it, so we just got the mirrors and hung it over.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview with Representative Emmer, you can visit our website, myfaithradio.com. In the search bar, put Tom Emmer, E-M-M-E-R, and you can hear the entire interview. It went swimmingly, as they like to say. Coming up next, Paul Anthony from Shower Up. He is a good friend, a longtime friend, and doing an amazing work in Nashville with a ministry called Shower Up. If you haven't heard about it, do stay tuned. I think you'll enjoy hearing more. 38 past the hour.
What are some ways I can help my teen become more independent? That's what I hear from parents around the country. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. You have the power to encourage independence in your child. Here are a few things that you can do as a mom or dad to foster self-reliance in your teen. First, give them responsibility at home. Are you still doing everything for your kid? Stop it. Second, set reasonable boundaries and make them age appropriate. Third, let teens learn from their mistakes. When you protect them from consequences, you're stunting their growth. And finally, spend more time in discussion instead of dictation.
Having trouble parenting your teen in today's rapidly changing culture? Mark Gregston can help. Get instant access to Mark's new free parenting course online at freeparentingcourse.com.
Two of the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. I'm Dick Whitworth filling in for Bill. It is a joy to have a dear friend, Paul Anthony. Paul is founder of Shower Up Ministry. We have known each other for 20 plus years, and you're the cleanest guy I know, Paul Anthony.
No one's ever said that to me before.
Well, you're in a ministry called Shower Up. You have to be.
Well, one would think that, wouldn't they? Usually it's funny, after we do a shower-up event, especially in the summer here in Nashville where it's so hot and humid, I get done with it, and it's like, I need a shower. Of anybody here, I need a shower.
That's funny. Well, Paul, it is great to have you with us again. I always enjoy getting an opportunity to chat with you, number one, but also I appreciate what God is doing in you and through you. And for those who are the uninformed, the uninitiated, what is Shower Up and how did it come about?
Well, Shower Up is a is long and short of it, it's a mobile shower unit that we use to provide showers for the homeless here in Nashville. It all started because we've been working with the homeless for a number of years, and we saw a real need. In Nashville, like a lot of cities, you have a homeless population where they can often find meals, they can find clothing and different resources. But finding a shower, especially here in Nashville, was very difficult. We have anywhere from, depending on how you count, 4,000 to 10,000 homeless men, women, and children. And out of all of those folks, there's about, well, a little less than a dozen shower heads available to them throughout the week, depending on the day of the week and the time of the day. So we saw a real need, and we thought, okay, we can take showers to them. So we have a mobile shower truck. It has three shower suites in it, and we're able to provide hot showers, clean towels, shower supplies, personal care, and most of all, and we say this a lot, we're not in the ministry of making dirty people clean. We're in the ministry of giving hope to the hopeless. We're to give grace to those who just haven't experienced it, and we're sharing God's love with those who may have heard of God, but maybe just haven't ever seen him in action.
Yeah, demonstrated. I love that, Paul. You and I, we were together in Illinois, then you moved to Wichita and now in Nashville. Were you surprised about the homeless population in Nashville?
Yes and no. I mean, we had worked with the homeless in Wichita, and we had seen, you know, kind of the situation there. When we came to Nashville, though, here you expect to see affluence. Nashville's a great city. They call it the It City, and I'm not even sure what it means, but it's the It City. But you expect to see affluence and all these, the wealth here and things like that. But there's an element of the society here that lives far below the poverty level, and many are homeless. So we were very surprised by that. What really encouraged us, though, is just the number of people who are willing to volunteer and roll up their sleeves and spend some time serving those who are in need.
That's very cool. Give us an idea of how it works. Do you do it on the weekend? Is it through the week? Really just kind of give us an overview of what a Shower Up event is like.
Well, we go out several times a week, and we have different teams that go out. We have volunteer teams that will take the truck, and they'll go to different locations around the city, and they'll set up for a few hours, provide showers, and they'll provide conversation. They will also look to see what other needs can be met. But when we go out and set up, it's usually of an evening or as a Saturday. And it's when people can volunteer their time. And it's also very crucial that time of day, because for a lot of people who are living in tents or they're living on the street, they may have a day job. They actually may be working during the day, but it's usually kind of a hard labor thing. It's usually dirty work. We have a friend named Chris who he's starting his work back up again, but he's a landscaper. At the end of the day is when he needs a shower. Guys like you and me, Dick, who don't have rough hands and dirty fingernails, we get showers in the morning.
That's true.
But guys who work hard for a living, they get showers in the evening. And so we try to provide that when they need it.
What's been the response thus far?
Oh, tremendous. Just tremendous. Not only from volunteers who volunteers are one of our core groups of people that we're trying to reach, because not only do we want to serve the homeless, but we also want to make sure that people like you and me who kind of want to help out but maybe don't know where, we don't have an on-ramp to get involved, we want to provide an on-ramp for them to serve, and the response has been tremendous. We have people who come out who never served in any capacity before, and personally, my belief is following Matthew 25 when Jesus said, when you did it for the least of these, you did it for me. But he also said, when you didn't do it for Lisa Lees, you didn't do it for me. I want to see people look at this situation and go, wait a minute, if I can serve the homeless, maybe I could go visit someone in prison. Maybe I could talk to my neighbor. Maybe I could go talk to someone in a nursing home. And so we want to see those kinds of things happen. The response has been tremendous from the city as well and the community. But for those that we serve, well, I'll tell you that Albert, we met Albert last night. He's been on the street for a few weeks, got out of prison a few weeks before that, and he's just trying to find his way back into the mainstream of society. Homeless right now, he says the number one thing that he was looking for was trying to get a place to get a shower, because that's so important when you're trying to find a job,
sure,
when you're trying to get back in the mainstream. But he said the most important possession that he has is his Bible. And so when we sit down and talk with Albert, you know, he's grateful to have a shower. For him, it's a source of hope. It's a source of optimism. You know, when you get a shower, things are fresh. Things are new. There's possibility in life. And so we've seen just tremendous things happen. People have gotten jobs. People have gotten housing. And I don't know that a shower changes their lives that dramatically. But what happens when you get a shower is it changes your attitude, changes your mindset. And we've seen tremendous things happen with people.
My guest this half hour, is Paul Anthony, founder of Shower Up Ministry. We're going to continue the conversation with Paul in just a moment as you're listening to the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. It's 47 past the hour. Past the hour. You're listening to the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold. I'm Dick Whitworth, and it's a joy to be talking to Paul Anthony, who is founder of Shower Up Ministry out of Nashville, Tennessee. Great to have Paul on the line. And Paul, I do think for the record we need to set it straight that radio work is really, really hard work, and unless we've offended any other radio hosts across the country by you implying that this is really not much of a job, I think you owe us an apology.
I'm sorry. Listen, all the radio guys I know, yes, you're right. I do need to apologize because I've just spilled our dirty little secret.
Yes, there you go. Well, Paul, it is great to have you on the line. Do appreciate you so much and what God is doing in and through you and your wife and family. And it is really amazing. We did have an interesting question come up, was actually brought to our attention. And I assume there's an answer to this, that if I take a shower, do I put my dirty clothes back on? And that's a legit question.
That's a great question. And that's probably the question that we get asked most often. So one of the things that we try to do is we try to partner with other organizations. So when we go out, we're not alone in serving. We're also there with folks who are providing usually a meal and clothing. So we work with folks who do clothing ministry. We specialize, and this is kind of a funny thing to specialize in, but we specialize in socks and underwear. So that's an area that we want to make sure that everyone has at least those items that are clean and fresh and available to them. Sometimes they want to have new clothes. It's not guaranteed that they're putting back on dirty clothes. It's not guaranteed that they have dirty clothes. There are laundromats that oftentimes that they can use. There are laundry facilities that they have access to. Sometimes, you know, during the summer, they may just chuck what they have and put on new things that they're able to get from these other partner ministries. So we are aware of trying to make sure that when people do get a shower, they're getting fresh clothing. And so, yeah, that's a great question.
Well, thank you for the answer. That's a great answer. You've been doing this for a little over a year, or right about a year, and you're about to provide your 1,000th shower. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's been amazing, and God has been blessing this ministry and and the work that we do. A year ago, I never would have imagined we would have been here, but here we are. Yeah, just about to give our 1,000th shower. It'll happen this month.
And you have a second vehicle around the corner, correct?
We are currently fundraising for a second vehicle. to not only provide more showers in the locations that we're currently at, but also to expand into other locations around the city. There's a great need here, and so we're trying to satisfy that need. We've been in talks with other folks, too, about providing shower up in other communities and other cities around the country. So there's a lot of cool things happening, and we're very excited about it.
Well, you know, one of the I get your newsletter, and I saw a video. I think she was in elementary school, maybe 9, 10, 11 years old, of a young girl who was collecting coats for the homeless. Can you tell that story?
Yeah, you know what? She was just such a special girl. She saw that there was a need. And, of course, you know, we don't get winters here like folks in the upper Midwest get winters. But when you're living in Nashville, 40 degrees feels cold. And we don't have a lot of winter coats just stockpiled, especially for the homeless. There's a real sense of when you're trying to travel light, if you've got a heavy coat, okay, you're going to need that. But you get rid of it when spring hits. So every year there's a real need to have winter coats. And she saw a need, and she just said to her classmates, her friends, her neighbors, her family, hey, we need some coats. Could you help out? And literally, I mean, just dozens and dozens of coats this young girl brought. It was so cool for us to see that because, you know, when we talk about generosity and those kinds of things being born in the hearts of children and young people, that is so encouraging. And that just to me is that's the spirit of God living in someone's life.
Well, you could see the video in her face was just alive. I mean, she was just so excited to be a part of this ministry and to know that that she was doing good for many. And really, God was using her in a very significant way. Paul, talk to us really about, you know, what circumstances lead to homelessness. You probably have some idea now that you've been working in this area for a few years now. What are some of the common steps that lead to homelessness?
Well, there are some things that, you know, when you think about homeless people, there are things that you get right when you put together a stereotype. But there are some things that we just don't even realize. A lot of homeless folks that we encounter have military background. They have served our country.
That's very tragic, too, by the way. That's extremely tragic.
Yeah, it's horrible. And they come out of that sometimes unable to fully avail themselves of some of the resources that are available to them because they're just not in a healthy place mentally and emotionally. So they wind up on the street. They burn bridges. For some guys, we've seen this numerous times. These are guys who they have found themselves through one or two different life circumstances. It could be a health issue. It could be a broken relationship. It could be a family issue. It could be a loss of a job. And they wind up being homeless really just through bad circumstances. Mm-hmm. And then they get embarrassed. They get ashamed. They burn bridges with family and friends. And they wind up with no other options. Their bodies are getting older. They can't go out and do some of the hard labor that they've known their whole lives. And they run out of opportunity. We have other folks who, like Albert we met last night, just fresh out of incarceration, trying to get a new start in life, and they're actually they've already hit rock bottom. They're working sure. their way back up, and then folks who are suffering from all kinds of different illnesses, whether they be emotional, mental, physical illnesses. Nashville, unfortunately, is the worst city in the country for chronic homelessness. These are long term folks. 2 out of 5 of our homeless are chronically homeless, long term because of different circumstances, but often because of different health issues.
Paul, if people would like to donate to Shower Up or learn more about your ministry, how do they do that?
Great question. Thank you for asking it. We are at showerup.org. We are a nonprofit charitable organization. We're faith-based. We believe that Matthew 25 lives through what we do. in serving the least of these. And so that's how you can find us. We're also on social media, Instagram, Facebook. Just look for Shower Up and you'll find us.
All right. Paul Anthony, founder of Shower Up in Nashville. Great to have you on the air, my friend. Always great to talk to you. We'll be back with some closing comments on the Early Morning Late Show. Thank you for allowing me to fill in for the last couple of hours for Bill Arnold, the Early Morning Late Show. Bill will be back on Friday. Looking forward to that. Today marks the 50th anniversary of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s last speech. I've been to the mountaintop. It was to a group of striking sanitation workers. Tomorrow will be the 50th anniversary of his assassination, and I know we're going to be talking more about that as a part of the Early Morning Late Show. I know Neil Stavem will be featuring some interviews and conversation related to that. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for praying for this ministry. Thank you for tuning into the Early Morning Late Show as you do so well. If you'd like to join us live 2 weeks from today, check it out on our website, myfaithradio.com. You can register online and join us for an hour of great fun and entertainment.
Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show. Connecting.